It's now time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to ask that you have a pencil and paper handy, because with the news, there are contact information, web pages, email addresses, all kinds of things that allow you to feedback and feed forward things that, you know, you could make a little bit of effort, you can make a whole lot of difference. So get that pencil and paper handy and pay attention. Here is the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field. Another bull buffalo was killed in Montana by a hunter this week, bringing the total to 5. One by one, the buffalo migrate across Yellowstone's boundary, and one by one, they are killed. Once again, there is not a single wild buffalo in Montana. The current hunt is no more than an extermination program set up to satisfy livestock industry's intolerance for our national icon. Government agencies plan to kill 900 to 1,000 buffalo this season through hunting and slaughter. Buffalo Field Campaign and Friends of Animals Wildlife Law Program has filed an emergency rulemaking petition to stop the slaughter, but the government has yet to respond. Mild weather has so far stemmed large migrations, keeping the larger populations of buffalo alive for now. Tragic events have also befallen the wild bighorn sheep population in the Gardner Basin. Some of them have contracted pneumonia, and they are starting to die. At least 10 bighorn have been found dead already. Pneumonia is incredibly contagious and has wiped out entire sheep populations. It is inconclusive how the bighorn were exposed to pneumonia, but it is highly likely that they contracted it from domestic sheep that were moved into the Gardner Basin 2 years ago. Buffalo Field volunteers have been spending a lot of time with these bighorns, and our hearts are breaking as they die, not knowing if they will all vanish. We are taking action, but there is little that can be done to ensure the survival of this population. Domestic sheep also carry diseases that can kill bison and other even-toed ungulates. As easy prey, they pose a threat to wolves and other predators, and they destroy natural habitat. And you can help by volunteering. The Buffalo Field Campaign is seeking warriors for the approaching field season. The Buffalo Field Campaign has seasonal openings for field volunteers. They have opportunities for every season, but they are in great need of folks during our winter field season, mid-November through May, and they're right in the middle of it now. And that's when wild bison are migrating into Montana. Any buffalo within Montana's borders is in the danger of being shot on sight, hazed, or captured and shipped to the slaughterhouse. All volunteers are provided room, board, gear, and training. We cater to most any dietary need and respect vegan and vegetarian diets. We are located in a big, warm log cabin on the shores of beautiful Hebgen Lake, just a few miles outside of West Yellowstone, Montana. I've been there. It is exceedingly beautiful and probably cold. Check the website for details, and we'll see you on the front lines. The Buffalo Field Campaign volunteers should definitely check out the webpage at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. If you have any questions, call them at 406-646-0070. That's 406-646-0070. And if you'd like to write, it's the Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758, and tuck a big wad of bills or a check in there. Once again, the webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign. Tell you all you need to know and more. And one of those things is the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. Sea Shepherd has intercepted poachers in the Southern Ocean. Recently, the Sea Shepherd conservation ship Bob Barker intercepted the illegal fishing vessel Thunder at 62 degrees 15 minutes south, 81 degrees 24 minutes east, inside the CCAMLR, the Commission for the Conservation of Antarctic Marine Living Resources, in their region of management. Fishing gear, marked by the presence of three orange buoys, was also located in close proximity to the Thunder. A known poaching vessel, the Nigerian Flag Thunder, was issued with an Interpol purple notice following a joint effort by New Zealand, Australia, and Norway. Thunder is also on the CCAMLR's blacklist of illegal operators and is known to utilize gill nets in its poaching operations, a method of fishing that is outlawed by the CCAMLR. In the 2006-07 Austral summer, the Australian Customs and Fisheries Patrol vessel Oceanic Viking and the Australian research vessel Aurora Australis sighted the vessel, then named Typhoon, within the fisheries management area. In 2013, Australian Fisheries Management Authority reported that Regional Strike Force denied Thunder port access in Penang, Malaysia, and Bali after it tried to offload millions of dollars worth of illegal catch. Captain of the Bob Barker, Peter Hammerstead, immediately ordered the Thunder to Fremantle, Australia, to report to Australian law enforcement authorities. I have notified the captain of the Thunder and his crew that they have been placed under citizen's arrest and that they must cease their illegal fishing activities immediately and report to the Australian authorities. Should they ignore this order, I have notified the Thunder that Sea Shepherd has no choice but to directly intervene in order to obstruct their continued illegal activities. Captain Hammerstead then notified the CCAMLR authorities, the Australian Federal Police, and the Australia's Fisheries Management Authority that the vessel had been located within the CCAMLR region. Captain Hammerstead has urged Australian authorities to take action against the poachers. Australia is an integral member of the CCAMLR and has dedicated much time and resources to combat IUU fishing that targets toothfish in the Southern Ocean. We now call on them to uphold this reputation and take action against these criminal operators. The Thunder was headed in a westerly direction with Bob Barker in pursuit. IUU, illegal, unregulated, and unreported fishing of toothfish, continues inside the CCAMLR region despite the Commission's efforts to eliminate this threat to the Antarctic ecosystem. Currently, six operators are known to be involved in illegal, unregulated, and unreported fishing of toothfish inside the area. Operation Icefish is Sea Shepherd's 11th Southern Ocean Defense Campaign and the first to target IUU toothfishing operators in the waters of Antarctica. If you want more information, visit the website www.seashepherd.org.au. That's www.seashepherd.org.au. And the American Bird Conservancy has called for expanded yellow-billed cuckoo critical habitat in this story by Robert Johns of the American Bird Conservancy. ABC, one of the leading U.S. bird conservation groups, has asked the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to significantly expand its proposed critical habitat designation for the western population of the yellow-billed cuckoo, which was listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act in October. The request was made in a comment letter to Fish and Wildlife Service Field Director Jennifer Norris and comes on the eve of a December 18th public meeting being held on the proposal in Sacramento, California. There is no question that if we want to save this increasingly rare bird, we're going to have to do more than protect bare minimum habitat. We are well past a Band-Aid fix. More aggressive action is called for in this case, said Steve Holmer, Senior Policy Advisor at American Bird Conservancy. ABC is recommending that all current and recently occupied habitat be designated as critical habitat, that Fish and Wildlife Service identify and designate critical habitat for stopover, foraging, and sheltering areas, and that the Fish and Wildlife Service identify and designate critical habitat for additional unoccupied areas with the restoration potential to form large blocks of suitable cuckoo nesting habitat. Specifically, ABC has asked for critical habitat designation for six additional habitat patches with recent cuckoo occupancy and or breeding activity in California, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, and Idaho. The ABC comments provide background information for each identified cuckoo habitat patch and describe recent or historic cuckoo occupancy. The Fish and Wildlife Service also needs to identify and designate critical habitat along the cuckoo's migratory pathways in order to address the threat of collisions with communication towers and other tall structures, said Holmer. Water withdrawals and riparian grazing are also major threats to cuckoo habitat and need to be more restricted than they are now. Pesticide poisoning is also a significant threat. Fish and Wildlife Service should prohibit the use of pesticides in critical habitat. In the United States, only 350 to 495 pairs of the bird exist, with a similar number found in Mexico. The birds are isolated in small patches of increasingly degraded riparian forest habitat that are in close proximity to human-altered landscape, especially agricultural fields, resulting in the potential for pesticides to poison individual western yellow-billed cuckoos and reduce their prey base. As long-distance nocturnal migrants, yellow-billed cuckoos are vulnerable to collisions with tall buildings, cell towers, radio antennas, wind turbines, and other structures. The cuckoos are known to be attracted to lights that can lead to fatal collisions. An ABC report documenting birth deaths at towers found the evidence of a total of 568 yellow-billed cuckoo deaths at 17 towers. Researchers have found that by extinguishing the steady burning red lights on towers, nighttime bird fatality rates can be reduced by more than 70%. Birds are not as likely to be attracted to or collide with towers that are lit with only red flashing lights or white flashing lights. In December of 2011, the Federal Communications Commission agreed on interim changes to their system for approving applications for new telecommunication towers. The yellow-billed cuckoo has been extirpated, or nearly so, from most of its historical range across portions of 12 western states as well as British Columbia. There have been no recent sightings in Oregon, Washington, or Montana. In California, the population is estimated to be less than 1% of its probable historic size. Populations of fewer than 10 pairs exist in Nevada, Wyoming, Colorado, and Texas, and in Idaho and Utah, an estimated 10 to 20 pairs remain. The extent of the cuckoo's riparian habitat loss is extreme. They've lost 90 to 95% of Arizona habitat, 90% of New Mexico habitat, and 90 to 99% of California habitat. In Arizona, the state with the largest U.S. cuckoo population, numbers have declined 70 to 80% in the past 30 years. For more information, visit the website www.abcbirds.org. That's www.abcbirds.org. An historic critical habitat has been planned for Alaska's ringed seals in this story from the Environment News Service. Arctic ringed seals threatened by climate change could be granted protected habitat extending across 350,000 square miles of Alaska's Bering, Chukchi, and Beaufort Seas, an area more than twice the size of California. The critical habitat proposal from the National Marine Fisheries Service announced on December 2nd would be the largest such designation in history. Upon designation of a critical habitat area, federal agencies are required to consult with NOAA Fisheries on actions they authorize, fund, or carry out to ensure their actions are not likely to destroy or adversely modify that critical habitat. Designation of critical habitat would not affect subsistence harvest of ringed seals by Alaskan natives. Critical habitat provides key protections for listed species by prohibiting federal agencies from permitting, funding, or carrying out actions that adversely modify the designated areas. At the same time, Shell Oil continues to press for drilling permits in ringed seal habitat. Species with designated critical habitat are twice as likely to be recovering as those without, say the Nonprofit Center for Biological Diversity, whose petition for listing of ringed seals under the Endangered Species Act in 2012 resulted in the federal protection. Ringed seals, primary prey for polar bears, excavate snow caves on ice to shelter their nursing pups. As the Arctic warms, the sea ice is breaking up earlier. Rain falls on the snow, causing the snow caves to collapse, and as a result, ringed seal pups are dying in unprecedented numbers. This isn't just a victory for ringed seals. The melting sea ice is so critical to ringed seals, supports a wide variety of wildlife, including polar bears and walruses, said Shay Wolf, climate science director for the Center for Biological Diversity. The quicker the government starts working to protect Arctic species like ringed seals from global warming, the more likely we are to avert the worst effects of the climate crisis. This year's summer sea ice reached its sixth lowest level on record. The lowest level was recorded in 2012 when sea ice only reached half its average size. Scientists predict that the Arctic could be ice-free in the summer before mid-century. After reviewing the best available information, our scientists identified the habitat features that are essential for sustaining Arctic ring seals, a species that is likely to become endangered in the foreseeable future due to climate change, said NOAA Fisheries Alaska Regional Administrator Dr. James Balsiger. We look forward to hearing from members of the public on this proposal. There will be a 90-day public comment period on the proposal, and NOAA Fisheries will soon announce locations and times for public hearings. The agency will consider comments received as it develops the final critical habitat designation. You, the public, are urged to submit comments identified by the FDMS docket number NOAA-NMFS-213-0114. Let me repeat that docket number. NOAA-NMFS-2013-0114. And you can reach the rulemaking portal at www.regulations.gov. That's the federal e-rulemaking portal at www.regulations.gov. And red knot shorebird has been listed as threatened in this story from the Environment News Service. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has announced that federal protection for the Rufa subspecies of the red knot, a robin-sized shorebird, designating it as threatened in the Endangered Species Act. The bird is at risk of extinction from the effects of climate change and development across the Americas. The red knot is a remarkable and resilient bird known to migrate thousands of miles a year from the Canadian Arctic to the southern tip of South America, said U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Director Dan Ash. Unfortunately, this hardy shorebird is no match for the widespread effects of emerging challenges like climate change and coastal development, coupled with historic impacts of horseshoe crab over-harvesting, which have sharply reduced its population in recent decades. Since the 1980s, the knot's population has fallen by about 75% in some key areas, largely due to declines in one of its primary food resources, horseshoe crab eggs in Delaware Bay, an important migratory stopover site. Although this threat is now being addressed by extensive state and federal management actions, other threats, including sea level rise, some shoreline projects, and coastal development, continue to shrink the shorebird's wintering and migratory habitat. Changing climate conditions are altering the bird's breeding habitat in the Arctic and affecting its food supply across its range. Climate-driven mismatches in migration timing that affect the peak periods of food availability are a major problem. The bird must arrive at Delaware Bay at exactly the time when horseshoe crabs are laying their eggs. Although historic threats to the Delaware Bay area have been ameliorated thanks to the actions of federal and state partners, our changing climate is now posing new and complex challenges to the red knot's habitat and food supply, Ash said. It has never been more critical that we take positive action to save this bird. In making its decision, the service analyzed the best available data in more than 1,700 scientific documents and considered issues raised by more than 17,400 comments provided during 130 days of public comment periods and three public hearings. Protections under the law will take effect 30 days after publication in the Federal Register. As required by the Endangered Species Act, the service is reviewing the U.S. range of the Rufa red knot to identify areas that are essential for its conservation to be known as critical habitat. The service expects to propose critical habitat for public review and comment in 2015 after the required review of economic considerations. And melting at glaciers at famed U.S. National Park threatens a rare water bug in this story reported by Laura Zuckerman, with editing by Cynthia Johnson and Will Dunham, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. The expected disappearance of the famed glaciers at Montana's Glacier National Park by 2030 could spell doom for a rare Arctic aquatic insect confined to high mountain streams that are warming due to climate change, U.S. scientists said recently. The Western Glacier Stonefly lives only in a few streams at Glacier National Park. First identified in 1963, the bug's population has declined sharply along with the park's glaciers, U.S. Geological Survey researchers said in a study in the journal Freshwater Science. The stonefly has disappeared from the bulk of its historical range, with sampling by scientists from 2011 to 2013 showing the insect in just one of the six streams it once occupied. It was also found in two new locations at higher elevations with cooler water, according to the study. Data collected from 1960 to 2012 shows glaciers at the park, which encompass more than 1 million acres on Montana's border with Canada, are likely to disappear by 2030, according to the study. The rapid melting associated with climate change has in turn spurred warming of streams once directly fed by glaciers that have since receded. The study, led by USGS aquatic entomologist Joe Gersh, is the first to document redistribution of an aquatic keystone species, one that plays a pivotal role in its ecosystem in the Rockies because of higher temperatures and glacial recession. Gersh said the stonefly is representative of an entire unique ecosystem expected to undergo dramatic alteration linked to climate change. The expected disappearance of the glaciers means fewer alpine streams, even at higher elevations. Soon there will be nowhere left for the stonefly to go, he said. The Western Glacier stonefly is one of two such water bugs endemic to Glacier National Park, undergoing review by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for Endangered Species Act protections due to glacial loss from climate change. And pictures of Hollywood cougar show a healthier cat in this story from FocusingOnWildlife.com and the National Geographic. Since making his Hollywood debut 2 years ago, P-22 has kept a low profile, avoiding the cameras and surfacing only at night. But this private celebrity is no movie star or pop icon. He's the resident mountain lion of downtown Los Angeles. In late March, when scientists captured the famous feline to change the batteries in his radio collar, they found him suffering from mange, a painful skin disease common in wild animals. He had also been exposed to rat poison, and his condition seemed precarious. But pictures released last week of the elusive cougar suggest he's making a Hollywood comeback. Remote-controlled camera trips at Los Angeles's Griffith Park caught P-22, the park's sole mountain lion resident and unofficial mascot, chewing on a mule deer carcass. Judging by the photos, P-22 appears sleeker and stronger, said Jeff Sikich, a carnivore biologist for the National Park Service in Santa Monica, California. He looks healthy, said Sikich, who has studied P-22 since he first appeared in the park in 2012 and treated the big cat for mange this March. He killed a nice big buck, and he has a full belly. Since a photo of P-22 prowling in front of the Hollywood sign landed in National Geographic magazine last year, the mountain lion has become an ambassador for urban wildlife. His wavering health also highlights the challenges facing wildcats who live so close to humans. Rat poison, for one, affects almost three-quarters of California's wildlife, often with lethal consequences, according to the state's Department of Pesticide Regulation. The human-made substance, which kills rodents by preventing their blood from clotting, makes its way up the food chain when animals eat poisoned rats. By the time the poison reaches a mountain lion, the state's top predator, its impacts are more subtle. We've only had two lions die directly from rat poison, said Sikich. When they die of other means, roadkill, mauled by adult males, we've found there's widespread exposure to these compounds, which may have made them weaker and more susceptible. It's also possible ingesting the rat poison made P-22 weaker and thus more likely to contract mange, a link that's well documented in bobcats. Sprawl is also a challenge for urban mountain lions since it isolates the various cougar populations living in the Los Angeles area. The biggest groups of mountain lions in the Santa Monica Mountains, the Los Padres Forest, and the Simi Valley Hills are penned in by roads, highways, and communities. Without the ability to mingle with each other, these populations may face inbreeding, which leads to higher chances of offspring with defects and lower fertility. Spread out over generations, the practice could decimate the mountain lion population in the L.A. Basin. If mountain lions never leave the Santa Monicas, we won't have them in Los Angeles in the future, said Sikich. P-22, who crossed two major highways to travel from the Santa Monicas to his new home of Griffith Park, may soon feel the sting of loneliness, too. While there's plenty of prey and no competition from other males in his bachelor pad, there's no lady lions either. Now in his prime, P-22 might try to make the dangerous trek back to the Santa Monicas in search of a mate. But even if he suppresses his urge to breed, his fate remains uncertain. This recovery is great news for him, said Sikich, but he's still in the park and staying elusive. But nothing has changed in his environment. I have no idea what his future holds. And turning to biological diversity news, a suit has been filed to save a tiny rare desert owl. The center has once again filed suit in defense of the Southwest's tiny pygmy owl, one of the most endangered owls in the world. Even though the owl's southern Arizona population is down to just 50 individuals, it has been denied the Endangered Species Act protection it needs due to a new Obama administration policy that makes it far more difficult to protect an imperiled species in important portions of its range. The Cactus ferruginous pygmy owl is small enough to fit in your hand, yet it's a fierce predator, often hunting by day. It's most threatened by urban sprawl and agriculture. The bird's original Center One safeguards were stripped from it in 2007, so with allies we petitioned again that year. But the Obama policy enacted recently sets a much higher bar for federal protection by requiring not only that a species be endangered in a portion of its range, but also that the loss of that portion threatens the survival of the species as a whole. Our new lawsuit seeks to ensure that pygmy owls don't vanish from the Sonoran Desert. And it's time to return grizzlies to central Idaho and western Montana. Back in 2000, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service finalized a plan to return grizzly bears to the Selway Bitterroot ecosystem in central Idaho and western Montana, but that plan was scrapped shortly after George W. Bush took office as president. So the Center for Biological Diversity has filed a legal petition to put that plan back into action. Scientists say the 26-million-acre ecosystem, the largest contiguous area of suitable habitat for grizzlies in the western United States, could support 300 to 600 bears and help curb genetic isolation for those living in and around Yellowstone National Park. The petition follows a Center report in June that identified 110,000 square miles of potential grizzly habitat in the west and called on the Obama administration to expand its grizzly recovery work. Grizzly bears live in less than 4% of their historic range and need to be reintroduced into the Selway Bitterroot to have any shot at real recovery, said Center Attorney Andrea Santarsier, who lives in Idaho. The service has repeatedly committed to reestablishing a grizzly bear population in this region. We're just asking them to move forward with that commitment. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. If you'd like to hear a rebroadcast of the Earth First Update, tune in to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM or www.freakradio.org Friday afternoons at 3 o'clock. You can also hear a rebroadcast on Free Radio Edmonton, YEG Radio at WordPress.com. That's YEG Radio at WordPress.com, 2 p.m. on Saturdays and 10 a.m. on Sundays, Mountain Time. Or tune in to KRFP, Radio Free Moscow, in Moscow, Idaho, 90.3 FM at 9:30 Monday nights. Or you could set your web browser to radio4all.net. That's radio, the number 4all.net, where you can listen to this or other Earth First updates online, or you can download them as a podcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio News and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.